This is Lele Pons from Suite 305 with Lele Pons. Game day at my house, it's chaos, but like in a fun way. The TV's ready, the remotes are ready, the kids' toys are going off, and somehow everybody needs batteries at the exact same time. That's why I keep Duracell stocked. And Duracell just released limited edition Duracell and Messi battery packs. The design is inspired by Messi's iconic left leg tattoo. So every battery feels like it comes with an extra kick. From the TV remote to automatic corkscrew, Duracell keeps us game day ready. Duracell double and triple A batteries are the only ones built different with power boost ingredients for long-lasting performance you can trust. Find the limited edition Duracell and Messi batteries in stores at Lowe's and Walmart or on Amazon.
I love days like these at the pool, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. I'm ready to make a splash with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza. Skyrizi is a prescription-only injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. At 4 months, most people saw 90% clearer skin when measured from head to toe, and many were even 100% plaque-free. People also saw significant improvement in psoriasis symptoms of pain, redness, itching, and burning.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Now there's nothing on my skin, thanks to Skyrizi, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Network. The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, Pitched in Blue.
Tonight, we're headed out to the Salt Lake Valley, and not to the older part of town, which I've been to and is amazing, but to a part of town with a home, in this case anyway, that was built just 20 years ago, 2006.
When were you in Salt Lake City, sir?
Back when I, in my former career in advertising, I went there frequently because I had some clients in the area and also a very good friend who lived there at the time and lives there once again now.
And was there anything odd about it?
I don't know. It just, everything feels kind of new and clean. And, you know, it's kind of like the purgatory, the version of purgatory that you see in the movie Defending Your Life.
Well, that's lovely.
Very nice malls. And yes, yeah. Unfortunately, you do have to have money. And Defending Your Life didn't need any money.
But right. Yeah. That's so, right. And you could eat as many pies as you wanted. Yes. But this is what's interesting to me about the story from the start. Everybody has the assumption that, it has to be an old story to old town, you know, Charleston.
Yes.
And an old jailer, an infirmary there, or someplace where there was trauma, Civil War battlefield. But you really don't. As I always say, the assumption is that I always go to my friend who said, my Honda's not haunted. You know, when I got a couple of EVPs there. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. They're floating around everywhere. If you were a spirit, why wouldn't you be just floating around wherever you pleased? I think that's the same. But here there are some towns I do believe that are more hospitable to these types of activities, spirit-wise, or maybe even thin places or portals. And in this case, we're going to talk about a specific place in a house. But yeah, just in Salt Lake City itself, has it earned that reputation? It's like, well, I don't think it needs to. And it doesn't have to be steeped in spooky history.
Yeah, people just, they see something old-fashioned with a big porch and gothic columns or whatever. It's that's not always how it goes. Yeah.
Right. It could just be the land. as I've come to learn too, that a brand new house or structure has been on. And also you have to realize native folks have been around stomping on the terra for tens of thousands of years, perhaps.
Yes.
Long before you got there and thought it was all nice, clean, and squeaky and free of any kind of spiritual shenanigans.
Yes.
But in terms of houses, our storyteller's house is practically brand new. So that doesn't really apply to this, right? Because, you know, the house has no past. Then where's this stuff coming from? Well, like I said, it could just be the land. It could be the air. It could be the people bringing stuff with them.
That's right. Could have hitchhikers. That's the question that hangs over this whole dead letter. Let's set the stage a little bit. The Salt Lake Valley sits in a kind of bowl, the Wasatch Range, walling it off to the east, and the Ochre Mountains to the west. And the Great Salt Lake is spread out off to the northwest. It's amazing, especially when you fly into it. Now, the whole valley floor is the bed of an ancient lake, Lake Bonneville, which drained away thousands of years ago, and there's a bunch of sediment there, which you'll see in some water, but that's receding very, very quickly. And the Wasatch Fault runs right along the foot of these mountains. Mm-hmm. And then in the mid-2000s, there was a building boom, and subdivisions got thrown up all across that valley. Big, what they call rambler homes, or as we say in the Southeast, ranch-style houses.
And they say that in California, too.
Yeah, there you go. And in a lot of cases with deep basements.
Yeah, basements, boy, that's saving my bacon here. Because you don't get that everywhere. And it's funny when you talk to people, it's like, well, none of our houses here have basements. And there's reasons for that. I think in Las Vegas, if you travel not too far from the state of Utah, but I've heard also putting in a swimming pool.
Yes.
You have to have insurance because you can do a whole dig, and I forgot the name of the type of earth, but it's so solid and hard, it will stop your digging immediately, and then you're just out of luck.
Yeah,
I can't remember what that's called, but somebody's explained that to me. It's like, so some places you have basements and others you do not, depending on the geology of the place. But I love a good basement. How many of us have fond memories growing up? Playing video games, watching old 80s movies, things like that.
Honestly, I had kind of this exact setup from this story. Mm. When I was the same age as our sender, my mom and I lived in a ranch style rambler house for most of the time I was in high school. It's pretty great being downstairs in my own space. And I loved it. And that's how it is for Daniel from tonight's letter, until it wasn't. Mm. So Forrest, this one's yours to read tonight. I actually enjoy how Daniel lays the story out. And there's some eloquence to some of the passages, which I thought was, it really brought me into the story more. So I enjoyed that. So anyway, whenever you're ready, sir.
In 2011, I was a junior in high school, and my parents purchased a house in the Salt Lake City, Utah area. It was built in 2006 and a rambler-style home with a basement. The basement itself was around 1,400 square feet. It was partially finished unprofessionally with drywall up, but no carpet. When we moved there, I noticed every doorknob in the basement locked and was backwards. So you could lock someone or something in from the outside. I changed that when we moved in, but thought it was really odd. Since I was a teenager and wanted to be as far away from my parents as possible, my mom gave me the entire basement to myself, which I loved, but immediately when moving in felt watched anytime I was down there alone. I have always been a skeptic of sorts, but after living at this house, I fully believe anything is possible. One night, I was up drawing around 11 p.m. in my room with my back resting on my headboard that was against a wall that bordered the foundation. Next to that room was an unfinished bathroom that had no drywall and had a gap that you could look down the length of that bedroom wall my headboard bordered, roughly 20 feet in depth, with the bedroom wall set a foot out from the foundation. Anyhow, I heard a rapid three knocks behind my head directly on the wall behind me, as if someone was knocking on a door. It made me jump, and I immediately thought my brother was trying to scare me and had shimmied behind the wall to do so. I jumped up and ran out to the bathroom with all the lights off and no light source in the bathroom and said aloud, "Very funny, Steph. You got me." When I heard nothing, I turned on the light on my phone and looked between the walls. There was nothing, and immediately every hair in my body stood on end.
As I type this, or any time I tell this story, I get goosebumps. There was no way a person could have shimmied 15 feet or so between walls and ran out of the basement in pitch black as quick as I hopped out of my bed and ran to where I did. No one was there, just me. Realizing this, I went back in my room and locked my door, pulled my covers over my head, and fell asleep with the TV on. I woke up around 4 a.m. or so to my DirecTV off and just a blue screen on my TV. The room pitched in blue. I couldn't move anything but my eyes, and as I lay there, an old woman crawled up from the bottom of my bed, arms first, and climbed my body until she was on my chest and I couldn't breathe or make a noise. She was somewhat translucent and not very detailed, but there. I was so scared that I was going to suffocate after 20 or so seconds, which felt like 5 minutes, before I closed my eyes and started to pray the Lord's Prayer. I was raised Catholic, loosely, but at the time my family didn't really practice. Anyways, the weight lifted and I jumped out of my bed and as a 16-year-old ran upstairs crying and jumped into bed between my parents like a 3-year-old who saw the boogeyman. I didn't sleep down there for 3 weeks after that. Eventually I did, though, and lived there for a long time with strange noises always happening throughout the night. I would hear rummaging through the storage room so bad I'd sometimes think there was an intruder. Eventually, my now wife and her 2 kids moved in with me in that basement while we saved for a place of our own. My wife would wake me up to noises and tell me to check it, which I did to comfort her a few times, but after a while I told her, "If you ignore it, it ignores you," which was the resolve I found best for strange instances there. Needless to say, this house convinced me solidly that hauntings are real, and no one can tell me otherwise. Sorry for the long one, but I've wanted to share this story with you for a long time, and once you started doing dead letters, figured it was time. Thanks for everything you do. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $3 million for the most comprehensive plan. So if your money is stolen due to identity theft, they've got your back. If you have personal expenses while resolving identity theft, like paying for travel or extra childcare, LifeLock has your back. Need coverage for lost wages because work had to take a back seat throughout all this? You guessed it. LifeLock still has your back. Plus, there's coverage if you need to pay fees for lawyers and experts to resolve your case. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join today. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
And now, back to the show.
All right, the first thing that jumped out at me about this story, it's a pretty mundane detail, but maybe there's a lot more to it than it seems, is all the doorknobs, everything being lockable from the outside. Like, I thought that was a little strange. I have certainly encountered plenty of incompetent contractors over the years. And there's no question that I've known a few that would have done this thinking they were doing it right and doing it completely backwards, or the people that worked with them. So
the other thing I run into, I think they do it on purpose, is that they'll do most of the construction on a place, but they will not yet have put in doorknobs or faceplates on electrical outlets, things like that.
Yes.
And this actually happened at a place I worked, which is a brand new building, speaking of this kind of scenario here, where they didn't put door handles in. It's like, yeah, you're going to come back and do that? Like, yeah, we got 5 other jobs. Like, yeah, well, we're paying you for this one. And then they had the gall to demand the whole payment. And so our office manager said, yeah, we'll pay you everything when you finish everything.
Right.
So anyway, but the question I have for you, if you remember from the story, Did any other family or people live in the house before them? Who put the doorknobs in on the other side where they were lockable from the outside?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because Daniel doesn't really talk about that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know,
my parents purchased the house in Salt Lake. So I don't think it was family necessarily. I mean, they could have been bought from family, but I feel like he would have pointed that out. So
yeah, no, somebody did that for a purpose, I think, in this story. I mean, we're kind of making fun of contractors, and sometimes they deserve it. But the idea is that this was kind of done on purpose. It reminds me of Skinwalker Ranch. Remember when there was locks on every cabinet?
That's right.
When the Shermans moved in. So that was somebody else before them doing that. It's like, no, you're going to want this. Trust me. I know it seems weird, but you're going to want these locked. Yeah. So he changes that. And again, it doesn't stop anything, but maybe there's something symbolic about it.
That's an issue, I think. And I think like the idea of locking something in is pretty freaky. And yeah, so could it have been a mistake by, you know, somebody who worked on the house, or, you know, you could have also had a nefarious character in the home who was locking someone up for some reason that wasn't necessarily paranormal, just, you know, punishment, weird, deviant, whatever. It could be anything. Ooh. Like, so
I hope not. That's worse.
I mean, we have to address that. Someone is going to say, well, admit, you know, maybe that was just a perv. And yeah, maybe it was just a perv. It's not necessarily a ghost in that scenario. However, whatever was happening, the next thing is this knocking sound. And it took Forrest and I had to spend a little time before we went on the air understanding the geometry of the basement and the room here. But this is the impression that you and I are getting, right, Forrest, is that the bedroom where Daniel was drawing and sitting with against a headboard, that wall, as he said, borders the foundation. But it's not literally physically touching the foundation. It sounds like there is a chase in there. Between
is that what you call them? Yeah, there's a space.
Yeah, that's what you call a little space that's not meant to be lived in or necessarily used, but it does give you access, or you could put equipment in there, or maybe it makes it easier to work on it if you have a problem or something. Because if the foundation is underground and you have enough room in the basement without building the wall right up to the foundation wall, why wouldn't you leave a little space? Plus, it helps you fight moisture or some other issues like that. So
yeah,
that's my guess. So what's happening here is that you can get into that chase, which is essentially like a hidden passage, but a very thin one. And you can get in there from the bathroom next to the bedroom because of something that's not finished or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what he was saying was that his brother, Steph, couldn't have possibly gone in there and would have had to get to knock right on the headboard, right behind Daniel's head, would have had to travel shimmy, as he said, down this 15 feet, down this narrow gap
in the dark,
to the wall and the foundation. And then escape.
Full of cobwebs and spider webs. And
exactly. Yeah. And spiders. And then escape and get away without making any noise or being caught as well, as because he was talking about running away out of the basement. And I love the very funny stuff, like the fact that was the first thing he said. It's like straight out of a Spielberg movie. It's like, it's always like, nope, it's not your sibling. It's not your loved one that did that. And when you figure it out, you're going to be pretty freaked out. So I just thought that part was interesting. But then you mentioned just last week on the dead letter that we did, you were talking about the physicality of knocking sounds and wondering whether or not those were something that you would hear in the real world, or if it's something that is making an impression on your senses, but it's ultimately internal to you, you know?
Yeah, how does that work? I mean, the best guess I can hazard would be that something is causing that energy in a burst against something solid and real, at least to our world, making that noise.
Right,
I said, or is that happening in the head of whoever's around in that locality? Yeah. And so is it localized? Or is it really just a force of energy? Because I wonder about footsteps, when people hear footsteps.
Yeah.
Because that's a little different. You know what I'm saying? There's rapping, there's knocking, there's scratching. We've heard so much of that through all the stories we've covered, and that there's that kind of variety of low-level stuff, which usually is the precursor to a much more involved and dramatic haunting. It's like the Bell Witch. Starts off with scratches and knocks and rapping and this and that. And it's not always the Fox sisters faking something. And it leads to usually something else later, where that's the first part of the gathering of energy to do this, to be able to do this.
Yeah.
But the footsteps, you wonder, is someone walking around, or if there is a ghost and it is walking on something, like, is it the weight of their being? Like, what's causing the iteration of footsteps sounds? One of the best ones that we've heard of is the, remember we heard the audio actually of this, the guy is under, speaking of crawl spaces and tight spaces, he's under the house. I believe this was in Southern California where there generally are no basements. Yeah. But he's in the crawl space with the gas guy from the gas company because they're looking at pipes.
That's right.
And no one is in the house above them, but they can hear somebody walking around and it freaks both of them out. And the guy actually had his phone with him and recorded the noises.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean anything to anybody else because you weren't there. It's like, well, that could be easily be faked. And sure, it can be unless you're that person and the gas guy. The gas guy also knows there's nobody in the house. So that's the first part of our story here is, like I said, it starts off with a little introductory knocking and also the whistling past the graveyard kind of response. It's like, I don't know what that is. I think it's got to be my brother. That's the only thing I can think of.
Also, it's three knocks. It's the Trinity, you know.
Yeah, so the time of night, it's 11 p.m. You know, we're not talking about the fourth watch hour of 3 a.m. to 3:30, 3 or whatever, but it's at night.
Yeah.
As Peter, the psychic on TV used to say, our nighttime is their daytime. So they're just much more active for some reason. And that's when he hears it. And I think the other thing that he explains with that is that there might be a space behind it, but further out is the foundation wall, which means on the other side of that concrete is just dirt. So it's solid earth.
Yeah.
And what's coming through there? Well, it's not something from the outside or the street. So that's what you have to contend with. And then waking up at 4 a.m., again, you're just past the fourth watch here. I'm not sure when that ends. And that's the biblical term for the watch segments of the night for the shepherds. And that, so the fourth watch would, I think, begin or end around 3 a.m. And so, of course, somebody has to be up all night and taking turns and shifts to watch the flock. And that's when stuff happens, when people are probably most vulnerable, and it's the dark of night. And so you wake up, and this is part of the story where you're talking about in our introduction, where I like the writing because it's very vivid. I can picture this perfectly. This blue light from the TV just kind of bathing the room, pitched in blue. Yes. And then the TiVo, I've never had a TiVo. Do you remember that, though? It probably had a bouncing logo.
Oh, yeah. My dad had one.
Did he? Okay.
So I got to mess with that sometimes.
Yeah, it's a very vivid blue, if I recall, from friends' houses, just giving it an ethereal feeling in the bed. And then the next thing here, and I think we should do an episode one day, maybe just a collection of the best stories we can find, is the old hag or the old woman, because it's the same darn thing pretty much every time.
Yeah. And so there's a lot about that that's really fascinating. And we have talked about it over the years on the main show and everything else. It's cross-cultural. There's a lot of people that try to get into what exactly its origins are. And does it exist or is it just in your head?
Hmm.
But the bottom line is lots and lots of cultures have been reporting these for as long as we've been able to find recorded history. Hmm. And the Japanese actually have a great name for it too. And I can't remember if we talked about this before, but they call it the Kanashibari or Kanashibaro. I'm not sure how to say it. Mm-hmm. Kanashibari.
Yes. And that loosely translates to something like bound by metal, bound, that's heavy metal. The picture is invisible iron chains laid over you while you sleep. So think about that, weighing you down, which perfectly describes the feeling you get if this happens to you without the looseness of the chains, but just something heavy and encapsulating and unbreakable. And the root of the word in Japanese is the interesting part here. And that comes out of Shugendo, this old tradition of mountain ascetics in Japan. We're talking about Buddhist monks, because originally Kanashibari was a spell that the monk would cast, and he was the one doing the binding, the pinning down of an evil spirit or some form of enemy, which happens here a lot.
A monk, that sounds a little like voodoo almost, like controlling
Scott, how many, we know people that have done some practices to dispel, you know, a spirit or at least limit their movement and activity.
Yes,
that's true. And they said, well, you can't get rid of it completely. You don't have that kind of power.
Right.
You're not Jesus or a priest, but you can have some power in controlling or limiting their influence. And so that's what can be done. Remember, I think it was a paranormal witness where Again, I think it was a Ouija board gone awry, and they turned to a Native American shaman or man that knew that, and he did a ceremony and put the board in like a kiddie pool under the water.
Right.
And that bound the spirit. Now, he couldn't get rid of it completely, but he was able to control it. And then I think somebody foolishly took the board out of the water and mayhem ensued once again. But that's a fascinating concept that you can bind that up or something that cannot be bound. It's like our name is Legion, for we are many. And speaking of Jesus and having the man who is possessed and no chain could bind him, no hold could control him. And he was completely wild and seemingly insane. And then Jesus cast the spirit out of him, or the spirit of many, into a flock of pigs, which then ran off the cliff, and that's how he dispelled them. But I make that point here because there is a reference to saying the Lord's Prayer, and for some reason, that works. And you can believe what you want, but I would be willing to bet it's like there are no atheists in foxholes, as the old saying goes. And if you're experiencing that and you feel like you're being suffocated, and you have the choice of like, well, I don't believe any of this. This is ridiculous. I'm not saying that. It's like, okay, well, continue experiencing the asphyxiation, or maybe try the Lord's Prayer and see how that goes. Right. And if that works, it's like, well, I don't know what the mechanism is for that, but it seemed to work and I'm going with that.
Well, there is some idea, you know, folks talk about this, and so I'll counterpoint that. And I see both sides of it, frankly, but there is this idea that, you know, it's a safety mechanism. You're waking up. This is what prevents your body from flailing about when you're dreaming. It gets disconnected physically. And so what happens is every now and then, on rare occasions, you come back from your REM state. And in theory, your body's like, oh, we got to be careful. He's hang gliding in his dream or jogging in a marathon or whatever. And it prevents that from being reconnected. And then that is what people are experiencing. And that's why it's cross-cultural and all this, because it's just a function of being a human being. But on the other hand, why are you seeing this particular thing, the old hag or somebody else? And that again comes down to, what are you most afraid of? Because you're in this vulnerable state. You're already in that state.
Well, yeah. But my question of that is like, okay, you could say that, well, that's just a function of the human brain in this condition. It's like, okay, so is that a file we all have, regardless of culture and background and race and ethnicity?
Well, the self-preservation file, maybe.
But why is it always the old lady? You know what I'm saying? It's like,
but it's not in other cultures.
Well, my point is, we just read this. Yeah, it could be other things. I mean, we've had listeners tell us a story about a demon.
Yeah.
This woman, Beth. I always remember Beth. It's one of the first people I conversed with, like over the phone, in depth about her condition. And this is from a long time ago. I think we'd been just broadcasting for maybe a year or two, and she told me about her mother's experience. And I always remember this because how she dealt with it. She had this recurring hypnopompic experience. She'd wake up or would see this demon come to the foot of her bed and sit on her chest, and she couldn't breathe. And it was not the old hag. It was like some kind of a demon thing. And it was almost every night, and she was exhausted and terrified. Right. And was, you know, losing her mind, because it's like, this is happening way too much to be something. And of course, you go to the doctor. It's like, well, just go to the doctor. And they tell the doctor that, and they give you a medication, which doesn't help. Until finally, she was so fed up with it. It happened again. This thing was like grinning and enjoying its control over her and sucking the fear, you know, feeding off the fear, that she was so exhausted, she just started laughing at it. And I always remember this, what Beth told me. She said the way her mother described it was, this thing looked so puzzled and quizzical. Like, you're supposed to be scared. You're not supposed to laugh at me. This isn't funny.
Right.
How dare you? And she said, as soon as she burst out laughing, it's like, okay, I've had enough of you. Just get out of here. Like, it left and it never came back. And that's the point here, is that it could be, you could say, well, it's the Lord's Prayer. Well, that's, why does that work? Well, that's just your brain comforting yourself. And
well, but also that is, to be counterpoint on that. And by the way, I frequently call on the Lord's Prayer and have with great fervor ever since we went to Kansas.
Well, there you go. That's the foxhole. You were in your foxhole.
I was in the foxhole. Right. I was, and I'm still in it. But what I will say is that I also know, because another thing that you and I both practice, and we talk about it off the air, is meditation and mindfulness and that sort of thing. That's also a meditative thing. So let's say you are having a physical reaction. You wake up, you're paralyzed. And what's happening is rather than panicking and taking your body into a panic, in reciting the Lord's Prayer, in a right. way, you are kind of meditating. It's like chanting or whatever else. And that may be all it takes to reconnect the faulty wiring in right. that instant. If you're going down the mundane path, it still means Lord's Prayer works. I'm just saying, what if it's something different? Or again,
well, what you're saying is that
you're laughing at the fear, right. you're controlling the anxiety, which this all goes back to Monsters, Inc., frankly. There's a lot more power in the laughing than the fear. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. Now, here's what I would say about that. Again, not to keep counterpoint, Jane, but the idea is that, you could say, all right, well, it's your body waking up. You can't breathe because your functions, your autonomic functions aren't online. So what they tell you before, I've heard this before, total secular way, which I believe, and I think it works. If you find yourself frozen, but you're waking up, and this has happened to me before, you get freaked out and you start to panic. So what you do is you try to concentrate on just moving your pinky. And if you can move your pinky and that starts to move, and then you can move other fingers and then you move your hand and your arm, and that will wake you up. Now, what I would say to what you're saying is that you're trying to just be calm, relaxed. If it's the Lord's Prayer or just meditation or just using visualization techniques of you in a hammock drinking a daiquiri on the beach and that calms you and you wake up, that's fine. But I don't think I've ever heard, nor have I experienced, because I've had a fair number amount of hypnopompic experiences. I've never woken up and can't breathe because you still have the autonomic function of like your body's like, okay, well, you can't move, but that doesn't mean we're going to shut off your air. You know, like until you die or pass out or asphyxiate. All the stories that I've read of this happening is that you feel this weight on your chest. Also the weight, the physical weight that as something is actually on your chest. And then you are awake and maybe you can't move, but it's not like it's choking you. The second thing I would say is that the instance of the Lord's Prayer or some kind of spiritual practice or talisman, your sage spray, whatever it is, works when people are fully awake and experiencing some kind of spirit oppression somewhere else, not in bed, fully awake, a haunted house, wherever you might be. And that seems to work as well if you really wanted to and you believe in it a bit. So I would say it's not always just waking up where that's been the case. And also you have this condition where you see different things. But in a lot of cultures, like I said, well, it's the thing you're most afraid of. What, an old woman? Not generally. Yeah. It's not a fanged demon. It's just like, it's some disheveled older lady with a long white hair or whatever. It's like, it's a little weird. She shouldn't be in my bedroom, but I'm not exactly scared of her. It's like, what is she, 70 pounds soaking wet? Like, I can handle it. You know, so like I said, it'd be very weird and disturbing and shocking, but like not something I couldn't, with a swift kick, get off my bed. The fact that you can't move, it's often an old lady. It's like something, I get it. The idea is like, oh, it's kind of weird. I don't know what this is, but like, what's the Baba Yaga doing on my chest? Okay, why is that image? And that's my point earlier. It's like, well, that's just your brain going through that. And people say that about the near-death experience. Like, well, that's just a memory tape your brain plays when you're deprived of oxygen and you're going to die. It's like, so, okay, let's take that as fact. Why is that pervasive through all of humanity for all eternity? Why is that? Why is we go to that one thing? And why does the brain have that file in it that just plays?
Right.
And it's just, because that's the thing. It's not the same for everyone. You're right. It's not always the same old woman. It's different things that immobilize you. We've heard stories again from David Weatherly, a guy seeing his something coming through the window and being a long snake, but like a feminine presence, half woman, half snake, that was something like a succubus that was smothering his brother. And he would have these experiences. And I also wonder, in connection to this, what about people that die in their sleep? Now, I was going to pitch to you, actually, I have a bunch of tabs open that I should close.
Don't you always?
I always do. But this is one subject, is sudden death syndrome with adults. And there's a lot of it in Southeast Asia about shadow people and coming and actually killing people in their sleep. Very sadly and tragically, I do have a good friend who's a relative of theirs, perfectly healthy, young, 30s.
Yes, you told me about this.
Died in their sleep. No explanation at all. Autopsy, right. The whole thing. Just, nope, it just happens sometimes. Not saying that anything spiritual, like the body can do that, right? For whatever reason, heart just stopped. That's the only explanation they got. But you do wonder about people that have these experiences, and does it go that far if you believe this, or whether you don't believe this? Does it go that far where these things can actually be fatal, where your heart was disturbed enough, you've got arrhythmia, and you're deprived of oxygen enough that it actually has a very negative effect up until actually killing you?
Yeah,
I don't know, but like a lot of people believe that. And that's what I'm saying about some of these cultures, especially in Southeast Asia, where they do believe there's a form of shadow person that can kill you in your sleep. And they do what they can to protect against it. But getting to your point here, because I do believe that there is something to this. I don't know why Daniel was experiencing this. It may be the house. Sounds like he's just a regular average guy that he's not playing with Ouija boards or opening portals. This thing is just kind of there. And so I think there's different reasons for people experiencing these things. I think people can unwittingly invite these things when they dabble in and actually invite the stuff in. It's like, it can be as simple as I've had friends that like, oh, I got this set of candles and it had this little magical instruction and it's all very new agey and earth friendly and this and that. But something weird happened to them where they lit these candles, said this little prayer, blew the candles out fully, went to bed, woke up in the morning, and the candles had all burned down to puddles of wax. It's like, okay, what did that? Did you wake up and light those candles again? Maybe. In a sleepwalking, somnambulistic kind of state, but they were freaked out. I said, I wouldn't be saying just random kind of prayers out loud when you don't know. This is a point to our last thing. It's like what we're talking about, Billy in the Wellington dead letter.
Yes,
is
last
that
week.
Wondering, well, where are these messages coming from? What are you communicating with? Well, you don't really know. And so here, we don't know what this old hag is, what this being is. I believe that this can happen. Once again, we have somebody who's like, I don't believe in any of this at all. And I didn't, but now I wonder, and definitely keep open the possibility that these things kind of can happen because they experienced it themselves. And that's the real proof of the pudding.
One thing I did want to touch on, again, in the mundane category in the basement, it could be pipes. Could be pipes knocking. Water hammer effect inside of pipes that, you know, when you turn it,
Okay, well, thank you, Brian Dunning. This is the...
Well, no, I'm just saying,
is it also causing the old hag?
I'm stopping a few extra emails from the inbox.
I see. You've got pipes, plus you've got radon, plus you've got natural gas, plus you've got black mold making you hallucinate. It's like, that's a lot to cover all the bases.
All right.
And that's usually what I say is that when you have a mundane thing, it covers one base out of five or six.
Yeah, that's true.
Towards the end here, of course, when he gets married and the kids moved in and they're sleeping in that basement while they look for a house of their own, these things are happening. And the wife is like, hey, somebody's in the house. Go check on it. And he will do that, like, okay, yeah, because I don't want to tell you that there's a spirit down here. So let me just do that. The part that I love is that, he did that, lived there for a long time, and the noises would happen throughout the night. So he's still hearing rummaging through rooms, which is creepy. So the hag didn't.
Yeah.
That's my earlier point, is that you can bind something or limit its activity, but it's still kind of there. You may not have enough power to banish it completely. But the new wife there is waking up to noises and asking him to check on it. And then he says after a while, it's like, well, if you ignore it, it ignores you. Which he says, which was the resolve I found best for strange instances there. What does a wife think about that? It's like, what do you mean it? Like, what are you talking about? If you ignore it, it ignores you. Like, what is down here? And so what is that conversation like?
I
found that kind of fun and amusing. It's just that the fact that now you're introducing somebody new who has to live there.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here? Because you definitely have an intruder problem or something else is happening that you're not quite telling me about. And so to kind of leave it that like, if you just ignore it, it's like, okay, so I wish they would have gone on to explain how that was taken. I doubt you would have told the kids. Also, it's not totally benign. Like, there's something there that is causing you discomfort and worry and fear.
When I guess he wound up being in the house for a while. I mean, he did leave. He said he didn't go back in there for 3 weeks. He first of all, paranormal apathy, went back to bed or basically fell asleep, woke up at 4 a.m. Then the next day decided, I'm not going to sleep down there for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a real kind of fear. I do think it's to the point of me talking about pipes banging or whatever else. I feel like his parents would have said to him, oh, that's just the pipes or whatever, as opposed to, we're going to let you stay upstairs for 3 weeks. They obviously couldn't talk him out of it with some kind of mundane explanation.
Yeah, I also wondered what the parents thought as well. Did they experience anything?
Right.
Where you just kind of like, okay, yeah, you can do that. Because most parents I know with mine, it's just like, okay, that's enough. Get back to bed. You know, get back to your own bed. And because part of it is fine. I think you need to face it. Although not being armed with any kind of information about what you're dealing with or how to deal with it is terrifying, especially for a young person, you know. But
yeah,
I do wonder what other folks thought, and it would be a great place to ghost hunt because it sounds like there's something residual there always.
Yeah.
And then what did Steph think? The brother?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
A lot of times, if you have talked to Steph about this, you should listen to our series, The Kakowski Intruder on Astonishing Legends. You can find out sometimes siblings both experience something and have strangely never shared it with each other. So maybe you should reach out to Steph if that's possible.
I do wonder, I would say, Scott, I think I showed this to you a very long time ago, but Greg and Dana Newkirk had a really fun, and we still reference it. I think it's on the Wayback Machine now because it's defunct, but they're Weak and Weird website series, and they posted a picture that someone got when they were taking a picture. I think the background is that it was a photo taken at one of those mock convenience stores or grocery stores that are meant for kids, that it's part of another installation or something, you know, like a museum or fun, you know, science fair kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's miniature kind of stuff that kids can roam around and pretend to buy stuff at a store. And I think the guy was just taking a picture of it. And in the picture is something that looks like the old hag. It's very Wraithy, very W-R-A-I-T-H, in that it's just like these tattered, flowing, kind of blackish brown gray. It's pretty much like that, and it's very, very creepy.
Yeah,
and kind of a gray face. Another friend, close friend of ours, had a friend that took a photo of just the audience at one of those circuses, you know, under the tent with the benches inside, very traditional, small kind of circus somewhere in the Midwest, and sitting in one of the benches is something that looks like that, which I wonder if that's a version of some kind of old hag, because it did look like a shrouded woman, a very Wraithy shrouded old kind of woman with a gray face. It's hard to see because it's like a ring circus kind of thing. It's all the way across, but you could see it. It's definitely there. And they said that was not there. Also, if it was there, people would be freaking out. You know, like if that was some eccentric older gal who loved to dress up like that at a kid's circus, there would be complaints.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, it's just a fascinating story. Thanks for sending it in and keep us posted. All the people that have sent us letters. Like, let us know if anything else has happened.
Please do. And the thing I keep circling back to on this one is the locks, the backwards locks, the missing door handles all around the basement. What's going on there? What are you trying to like lock away? Hopefully, in this case, it's paranormal.
That's what I'm saying. Else, the worst part is that, humans are also the worst monsters.
Yes, indeed they are. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for trusting us with your dead letter. And folks, if you have one, send it in to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. And we'll be sure and check it out. We read them all. We can't respond to everybody, but we do read all the stories that come in. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Faris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Caricia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolin. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. first name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym? Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
This is Lele Pons from Suite 305 with Lele Pons. Suite 305 with Lele Pons is brought to you by Duracell. Game day at my house, it's chaos, but the fun kind. The TV's ready, the remotes are ready, the kids' toys are going off, somebody's blasting music in the kitchen, and suddenly everybody needs batteries at the exact same time. That's why I keep my Duracell batteries stocked. They keep for 12 years in storage, so you know they're really good whenever you need them. And Duracell just released limited edition Duracell and Messi battery packs. The design is inspired by Messi's iconic left leg tattoo. So every battery feels like it comes with an extra kick. The Messi level power for all your everyday devices. From the TV remote to automatic corkscrew, Duracell keeps us game day ready. Duracell double and triple A batteries are the only ones built different with power boost ingredients for long-lasting performance. So whether you're hosting the whole crew or just trying to survive the halftime chaos, power your devices with the battery brand trusted for all of it, Duracell. Find the limited edition Duracell and Messi batteries in the store at Lowe's and Walmart or on Amazon.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $3 million for the most comprehensive plan. So if your money is stolen due to identity theft, they've got your back. If you have personal expenses while resolving identity theft, like paying for travel or extra childcare, LifeLock has your back. Need coverage for lost wages because work had to take a backseat throughout all this? You guessed it. LifeLock still has your back. Plus, there's coverage if you need to pay fees for lawyers and experts to resolve your case. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join today. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $1 million each for stolen funds, fees for experts and lawyers, and out-of-pocket expenses. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join now and save up to 30% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Big transfer news today.
Who's moving?
Me. To the couch. With Domino's best deal ever since they just added stuffed crust.
Any pizza, any toppings, now with stuffed crust for $9.99.
It's a long-term contract with no release clause.
Only $9.99? Yeah, that sounds like the move. I'm heading straight to
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6/15 through 7/26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings, 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.